Do you guys mind if you give me a couple of minutes here? I had to get certified mail from the IRS, and it says I owe them $397,000. So do you mind if I just take a photo of this and send it to my accountant real quick? I've got to deal with this. Not a good day to be me. Give me a second. It's a little bit late. Yeah, it says intent to seize your property. So, which, I mean, honestly, I think that would be convenient for me. Then that would just work itself out.
Can you explain that? You probably just paid his estimated taxes wrong. When you're a small business or whatever, you have your income fluctuates a lot. So you try to do estimated payments every quarter. You probably just made more money this year than last year, so his estimated payments went right. If I had to guess, his total $400,000 sounds like a lot, but his total tax liability, if I had to guess out of nowhere, is anywhere from $5 to $10 million easily. I'm sure he made at least $30 million last year.
He probably paid.
He'll be okay.
Yeah, his estimated holdings are just not high enough, but yeah.
But he has an accountant. Don't they file taxes for you too? Yeah, but they can't know for sure how much money you're gonna make next year. If you have an active manager, they might see that your income is higher than they thought it would be, so they might adjust your estimated payments, but this is just like a standard, like you didn't pay enough or whatever.
I just found out I had to pay this year. They said basically they're gonna...
Is he actually gonna say an amount? I don't think he will.
It's gonna get worked out.
Or actually he could, I guess. It's not like he pretends to be poor.
They said basically it's gonna get worked out. It's not a big deal.
It's not standard. You don't get certified mail unless you ignore like at least two previous notices that you owe. Would you really be getting notice? I'm trying to think. If you would get notices that you owe before the 15th, if you pay early, I don't actually know. Because this is the 19th, they were due on the 15th. This has to be from last year. Oh, I guess it could be, maybe, I don't know. All I know is that $400K is not that much for the amount of revenue he's making, and it's not that much probably compared to his overall tax liability.
It's not even a tenth of it.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Deal.
What did I say? I think his liability is probably $5 to $10 million.
That was not even a tenth of it.
Yeah,
it
sounds right.
Oh, man.
It's likely he didn't do last year's. Zero chance. He might have been off on the payments, but there's no way that he's just not doing his taxes. It's way, 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 way too much money to not be filing taxes on that and to hope you'll skirt by okay.
How about that? To be fair, it was including a quarterly, right? I think it was a quarterly payment. So, like, guys, we've got to do a chair. I've got to get some fucking write-offs, okay? Like, I didn't know that. We got to get, like, I got to be, like, signing this house up to, like, a write-off or something like that. Oh, my fucking God. Wow. Oh, jeez. To be fair, you get a letter from the IRS that says you owe them almost $500,000. This is, I will be honest, I am slightly flustered. I have no problem chipping it. It's not a big deal. But, like, goddamn. Like, I gotta figure out something to do with this. I gotta buy some, like, fine art and, like, then write it off and then, like, have it appraised, pay the appraiser, and then say the value of it went down and then, like, write that off as, like, a capital gains loss.
The thing that sucks for streamers, even Asmongold, is that regardless of how much money you make in this business, you don't really have anything that you can write off. You're kind of just fucked on that. You just have to eat all that tax liability.
You could have employees, right? But that's kind of it.
What would he have? I guess. What would he have employees for?
Editor.
Sure. That's okay. One person.
Well, hold on. It'd be like five, depending on
even
how
five
big
people
the channel
would
is.
Not. It's just not much
okay,
compared
hold
to like
on. We're getting,
capital.
We're getting there.
Compared to other capital
types
of businesses.
You could have a cleaner for his house.
Yeah.
Write her off. A driver who sits outside. He could get a plane. Fuck it.
True.
Linus did it.
Absolutely true.
Okay. Right. So I think that we can break it down further into pillars.
It's the sniz guy.
So I think that these are philosophical positions and people just don't realize it. Mm-hmm. When you're arguing with a guy like Destiny,
yep.
The reason he's very frustrating for you to debate with.
Let's see. Because he has positions that are foundationally justified. He tries to hold you to actually answer the questions he asks. Because he has a large collection of facts or is at least researched the things that he has strong opinions about. Or
because he talks fast, screams over you, Wikipedia lords you. Which will it be?
The reason that he wanted to bog things down into things, like the most ridiculous thing in the world, though it's unprecedented. Everything's unprecedented. That's unprecedented, right? The whole idea there, and you pointed this out rightly, is, well, I guess words don't mean anything. We just use unprecedented, I guess, when we mean new. When we get down to the core, the pillar that holds up the belief of destiny, what is it? What is the pillars that hold up the left? What is the philosophical underpinnings?
I don't know in his case. I think in his case, actually, the philosophical underpinning is people who don't agree with him are bad people, and therefore...
Oh, that's a real philosophical underpin... Yes!
They need to be destroyed by any means necessary.
True. Yes, true!
I think that's... So it's about power, really.
That's not even an underpinning thing. That would be like an applied, like, way abstract, but okay.
Well, I think the idea... The philosophical underpinnings operate from the left-right dialectic. The left-wing pillar is based around anti-realism, anti-moralism. So that's why you end up with postmodernism and many of these other...
Holy dude, the buzzwords are crazy with these guys. Oh my God. Jesus.
Philosophies which come from left-wing liberalism. Those aren't coming from right-wingers. Those are coming from left-wingers. Mm. Right-wingers are the reason that they're so much more associated with things like traditionalism or things like religion, this kind of thing, is because they view society as being duty-bound, and progressives view everything through the prism of rights. So I have a right to do this. Mm. I have a right to do this. I have a right to do that. And the right is saying, you have a duty to do this. You have a duty to do that. You have a duty. So... This is
like, it's such a shallow analysis that falls apart, you know, in like 2 seconds. When you talk about like rights of things, like what about like the right to freedom of speech, the right to be unencumbered by government intrusion, the right to own a firearm? Like, these are rights that are just supposed to be protected by the government that conservatives strongly believe in, that they don't ever attach duty to. You don't have a duty to be responsible with your speech. You don't have a duty to be responsible with your firearms. Well, I mean, I guess they would hold you accountable if you got into a school shooting or whatever, but like, it's like one of those things where it's like liberals like it when the government is big and conservatives like it when the government is small. And it's like, not really. Conservatives like a lot of government power, at least historically speaking, when it comes to things like the military, or when it comes to things like, you could argue that like it requires somewhat of an expansive government to control a woman's right to have an abortion or not, right? You have to be involved in hospital intrusion, and sometimes in monitoring people going across the border, because you want to be able to track women who are getting abortions going to other states. And then you could argue that liberals want smaller government, literally on the flip side. Like, you could argue that it's a form of larger government to incorporate religious institutions into tax incentives, right? And liberals might say, oh, no, I don't think that there should be tax breaks given to religious institutions. That would be like maybe some kind of like smaller government. This idea of like, oh, big government over here, small government over here, or, you know, duty over here and rights over here, it's very shallow. I don't even know if I would say it broadly applies. Maybe you could make that argument, but like every time people bring up these two hugely different ways of categorizing a side, they always like point out the things that are obviously good on their side and the things that are obviously contentious on the other side, and then they leave it at that. And it's just such a shallow way of engaging with anything. But
right is saying you have a duty to do this, you have a duty to do that. You have a dude. So this is where that dialectic really clashes. From Destiny's standpoint, there's no such thing as a moral fact. None. They don't exist. Everything is dependent.
It's also like, how much are you like, just, you feel like so superior here, beating up on the most straw man version of anything I could say. Like, it's such a I can't imagine like how cringe and boring, like the most bad faith engagement with something I've said, and then like just beating it up with your other three mutual like circle jerkers. Like, oh my God.
Upon stance. So if that's the case,
then
you can't actually do anything immoral.
Oh, whoa. Do I advocate for like eliminating all criminal justice? Like, do I not believe that people could go to prison for doing something bad then? Or do I not believe that you could ever even say a person is wrong? How do I even criticize the wrongness of other people if I don't believe in any sort of, you know, moral statement at all? Like, it's just, ugh.
Which is why he does so many things which are immoral.
Oh,
right? Because
true.
From his perspective, it's just dependent on stance. The right is saying there's universality with morality. It's not just stance dependent. It's stance independent.
Hmm.
The reason that they get so upset with the left is because they perceive them as doing things which are horrendously immoral. But from the left stance, they're like, well, but it's all stance dependent. So I can't be doing anything immoral. And that's why the underpinnings for the kind of like philosophical pillars, they don't align, and why we're constantly clashing.
Hmm.
The right considers these people complete immoral degenerates, and from their view, they are. The left, on the other hand, sees that as being totalitarian and evil, and that they're there to control, destroy, oppress. Because from their view, could they be doing immoral if everything which is moral is dependent on their own stance?
Right.
Wow.
Which I think is an accurate description of what happens when the right looks at the extremes of the left and the left looks at the extremes of the right. But what I'm trying to get in with you, first of all, because it's interesting to me, because our country...
That's so deep. Let's say that you have a big company and I have hand-selected 100 DGGers Okay. I think they're really impressive. They've got good backgrounds. I think they're super qualified. I think they'll be an asset to your company. And let's say that you agree to interview them for the job. And let's say that of those 100 people that I send your way, absolutely none of them show up to the interview. They all miss the interview. I'm just curious, okay, what would your assumptions be about those people?
I would no longer consider them for that job. I would say, okay, well, these people...
But I'm telling you, they're really great employees. I swear to God, they're really great employees.
I would think less of you. Actually, I'd tell you that this happened. Then I would reach back out, since you've recommended them, and tried to reschedule. I would think worse of them for it. These people would have to really wow me in the interview to overcome them.
Really wow you, huh? Me. One of the things that's annoyed me more than like the philosophy arc thing, just learning all the dumb shit that people say, is definitely anything related to legal stuff. Cool. I don't know how to communicate to a layman. I understand I'm a layman, but for people that are completely legally retarded, how unfathomably fucking stupid it sounds when you claim that you have 60 incredibly strong cases on the merits and over half of them fail to standing, which is the easiest minimum. It's such a compelling talking point to people, but it is so, if you know the slightest bit about anything, it is so obviously fucking stupid. It drives me crazy. It is the easiest part of a lawsuit. People literally fabricate lawsuits by just finding a potential litigant in some jurisdiction to bring a court case because they want to, do they call these synthetic cases or whatever, the ones that they really want to get an issue to the Supreme Court. The fact that you can have 60 cases that you think are strong on the merits and almost all of them are dying on standing, in my mind, you can tell me if you feel differently, but in my mind, I would not think, man, it sure is a shame that all of these cases that were so good on the merits never got a proper, you know, hearing. I would think, oh, I'm guessing all of these cases are fucking bullshit if you can't even clear the basic standing threshold. That would be my assumption.
Right. So like you're running into something that every lawyer with almost every client runs into, where people show up with really bad preconceptions or no conception, and so they just kind of like ad hoc something together to try to explain what's going on, right? Like I had a client where just recently, nothing's happening in the case, right? But the other side filed the lawsuit. Uh-huh. My client hasn't been served. There is no movement. They've not asked the court to do anything, but they filed it. And so my client just immediately starts thinking that they have to comply with whatever they've asked for in that lawsuit.
Oh, sure.
And so it's like, it's just people just seeing this thing. And the hard part for lawyers is that you forget what people don't know, because stuff is just so basic for me as a lawyer. Like with the standing thing, we're like, you would say like, oh, it didn't even get passed on standing. My mind goes, wow, that's a fucking horrible case then.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't figure out standing. But to a normal person, right, they have no fucking clue what that means. And also,
I hate the term. It's a thought terminating thing, and it's another one of these truism things that needs to be eradicated from the civilized person's mind. If you're a barbaric savage, then maybe this is an okay thing. But when I hear things like on a technicality, therefore it shouldn't matter, or it was just a procedural thing, so it shouldn't matter, especially in the world of legal stuffs, it's like, well, without process and procedure and without the technicalities, like this, it's a whole system of rules. What a stupid fucking imagine trying to ship some code that doesn't compile and you're like, well, it should work, but like on a technicality, I guess it just doesn't run. Like it's such a stupid fucking phrase. And it's like, oh, well, on a technicality, I guess everything is good about it then, except for the technical stuff or whatever. It's so annoying how dumb the engagement is with all of it. Ugh.
Yeah. So like, that's something that I've really, I think it's something that has helped me in this community and also just in my legal career, is that I've worked really hard to be able to explain legal concepts to people to lay people in a way that they can engage with it. And a lot of lawyers have a trouble with it, but like doing that is really important. And one of the big things is to make sure you don't fall into idioms or just kind of turns of phrase that people are going to just already have the preconception. So like if I was talking to people about the standing issue in these cases, right? I saying it's a technicality or even procedural, I would not use those words, because they all think, oh, you cheated and you didn't actually have to do any work and you won anyways, right? Which is cheating. I would say it's like foundationally it couldn't get there, right? It's a foundational problem. And I think people can connect more with that and see kind of more of that perspective of like, oh, like it's not that it was a technicality, it's that they couldn't even bring the case, right? There's a problem with the foundation here, such that like it couldn't proceed. And so like trying to find those tricky words to avoid and then kind of the more, you know, tangible words for people to attach to is hard. And people, and also it's the, you know, the validation issue, but that people just want to be validated. But your frustration is shared by every lawyer ever. And it's kind of what I was talking about at the fundraising thing where you, like, especially with juries, right? They come in, they go, well, I know what murder is. I know what evidence I need to see. I know, you know, what a contract is. And so you have to reteach them that, and to do it in a way where they are willing to let go of what they already have, what they already think, and adopt what you're saying. It's very hard, and it's why you usually are a lot of the times in these cases when you're trying to get the jury to do that, you have to bring them to it, which is why the Socratic method is such a big deal in the legal world, because a big reason is that if you can get the jury to think, or the person you're talking to think that they came to the conclusion instead of you putting it there, right, then they're much more likely to believe it. And so that's why things feel a bit roundabout and stuff like that. But I mean, the other thing on
also another those, and another quick thing for a lot of these fucking losers too is that, like, the I know nobody reads anything, but, like, the judges wrote a lot about the contents. Like, in a lot of these dismissals, the judges do write about the underlying evidence as well. And a lot
you're
of these
Trump cases,
yeah. And a lot of these, like, I hate this whole world. When you look at it's so night and day looking at this Department of Justice versus the last one, bro. When the feds drop an indictment on you in a real DOJ, you're, like, dead to rights, like, in the indictment. Like, whatever they showed the grand jury almost seems like, fuck, like, it's over. Holy shit.
You might,
like,
as well be convicted.
There is so much. Like, I win my debates off of just what's in the fucking indictment, let alone who knows how much other evidence they're holding back or can present at trial or could find via subpoena or additional investigation. Like, those indictments are rock fucking solid. These guys are... I think one thing that people don't realize is that... For civil courts especially, right? Like, the point of civil court is that the court has to be able to give you some kind of equitable relief for whatever injury you've suffered. I don't think people realize how unbelievable the relief that these guys were seeking in the cases too, which in my mind also, now maybe this is a layman thing or it's retarded and I shouldn't think this way, but in my mind, when the relief you're looking for is so unbelievable and then taken in conjunction with how light and airy the evidence you're giving is, it's just crazy to me. Like, on the court case that this guy was a part of, I'm pretty sure the relief they were seeking from the court was to overturn Georgia's electoral vote. And the underlying evidence that they supplied in the complaint was a single affidavit by QAnoner, but a single affidavit. An affidavit, that's it. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, you're looking for what would probably be some of the largest relief ever granted by I think it was a district court they filed in. I think it was another reason the judge got mad, because it was supposed to be in state court. But you're looking for some of the largest relief that could ever be provided, and the evidence you're giving is a single affidavit? What the fuck?
So, yeah, it's definitely frustrating. It's kind of the reason why I hammer home this IRAC method thing I talk about a lot, because when you jump to kind of the facts of the case and how ridiculous they are, people can kind of sit there and try to justify those facts however they can. Whenever, like, what I would do in that case, if I was arguing with somebody, I would say, you know, I think it's really fucked up, the idea that, like, a court, like a federal court, should be able to come and overturn an election, right? Like, you would agree with me that our federal courts really shouldn't be able to come in and get involved in an election. And
not without
get involved
exhausting,
in people's
votes. All the lower stuff and everything. And even, even for exhausting the lower stuff, I think you have to go through up to the state Supreme Court, and then those cases get appealed directly to the U.S.
And
Supreme Court, I think, right? Yeah.
And so, like, let's say we agree. So you say, yeah, that's how you feel about it, right? And I go, okay, well, great. Well, in this case, that didn't happen. They didn't go to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. and they didn't do anything to get it there. So we just agreed that the courts shouldn't be able to do that. So no matter how you feel about it, you would agree that that didn't happen in this case, right? Yeah. Now, because it's kind of this thing where, like, they are happy to sit and fight in this, like, create any kind of hypotheticals and fight over the facts to justify their position. But if you can hammer down the logic for how things should work and then apply it to things that did happen, it makes it much harder for them to weasel out, because then you can say, well, we just agreed earlier before to that. And if they say, I don't in this case.
I can do it on, like,
a bad faith piece of shit.
I can do it if I'm explaining to an audience or to somebody who genuinely doesn't know. But yeah, in the face of other people, like, I don't know if you saw my debate yesterday with that guy, that CJ dude. Yeah, it was just, it's so frustrating that talking point of, like,
surprise or something.
Yeah, so frustrating that talking point of, like, it still persists this day. They didn't even evaluate the merits of those cases. They all got thrown out on standing, on technicality. And it's like, oh my God.
Well, and the follow-up question to that, I would put to you for that is then, like, well, why didn't they appeal it?
Sure. Well, I think for a lot of them, they might have tried and they just got shut down, or they didn't even hear the appeals, the appellate courts.
Sure. And then you can say, and it's kind of a thing where, like, I would try to put it onto them of the justification, because I think what happens is, like, if you say, well, why did they appeal it? Or, and if, even if they say, oh, well, the appellate court's in here. Like, okay, why didn't they take the Supreme Court? Why did the Supreme Court do anything about it?
Yeah.
And it because it keeps putting it on them to say, because I need to hear justification from you. Because
on a one-on-one combo, I can do it if I push. It's just so hard to get, like, we're going to do a 60-minute show where we can drill down out of the single topic, because people always weasel out at the very end. Like, even with Tim Miller, there are times where it's just not a thing that you do with, like, media people or mainstream people. Like, this is exclusively, like, a streamer behavior. But it would be really nice to say, like, hey, I'm going to screen share with you. Let's just read this thing for, like, and go over this document 30 minutes. But, like, you can't really do that. Like, most people just aren't accustomed to that back and forth. Like, I guess streamers or YouTubers are. But, God, it would be so nice. Yeah. What part of this do you disagree with, you know?
Yeah. Like, we're currently doing a bunch of depos at my firm for this really big case. And I'm, like, digging through some documents for it right now, actually. But, like, let's say I'm in a case and, like, I ask a question that this person knows the answer to, and they say, like, I don't know. Well, like, that's not really a good defense, because I can go, really? You don't know? And then I can slow everything, because I've got all day. I can just slow down and go, do you know what the name of the company you work at is? Yes. Okay, great. Do you see that name on this piece of paper? Yes. Okay. What does that sentence say? And I can slow it down and make it painful as fuck and make them walk through every single thing. And then at the end of it go, do you have an answer to the question that I asked before? And if they still say no, then I can read that whole thing to a jury and they look like a total fucking fraud and an idiot and all of their stuff gets thrown out. But the problem is that, as you've said, there's no way to discredit these people in front of their own audience, because their audience will justify everything they say, right? Like the whole point of, like, a lot of, like, witness testimony questions is that you're up there trying to either bolster that witness to make them credible,
or undermine them,
right? And the problem is that, like, the audiences in these things, everybody is already, it's not like, oh, not necessarily like team sports, I'll just believe anything, but, like, the amount that you would need to overcome to attack their credibility. And then also, like, if I was going to attack the credibility of, like, a conservative, like, I would try to make them look gay or something like that, right? Because that's what would undermine them. Facts aren't things that they care about, right? I need to show that this person has an account on a girl cock website, and he will be destroyed. Nothing he says will matter anymore, right? And that's kind of the hard part, is that there's a debate going on about facts that nobody in the audience is vetting anything, because they're using all these other reasons. And in court, I mean, not, like, I just use extreme example, but, like, in court, you can do stuff to undermine people in those ways, right? Like, were you ever a felon, right? Like, have you ever been convicted of something, right? That can be
it's easier in court, though, because, like, because you can ask a clear line of questioning and they're forced to answer. And you've got 12 people who have been read a clear set of rules that know how they're supposed to evaluate things. You can't rage quit.
Don't
give
the jury too much credit, but...
Well, I give them a lot more credit than an average audience where there's no judge. And the person can... Yeah, but...
I think the... I think the other side, though, is that one debate you did on Palumbo, or whatever his name is.
Palumbo.
Not the most recent one, but the other one where you just called that guy, like, a human piece of shit or something. And then you were like, I stand by my statement. I was like, yeah, like, that's kind of, to me, that's how I would probably go into a lot of this, of just like, I'm just going to make my statements. If you want to engage with them, you can. But a lot of it is, to me, it seems like there's a game being played where, like, there's these two parties in an argument show up to these shows, and, like, one party is chasing the other one, trying to get them to convince the other person. And that party usually is at a huge deficit, which is probably why, like, Andrew Wilson likes to do the internal critique, because it forces the other person to chase him into agreeing with them. And I think whenever you take that strong, like, fuck you, you're a piece of human shit stance, it is strong enough that it kind of pulls them, and they're like, oh, you know, you can't say that. And they kind of start... Now they have to go on the offensive to you. And I think that that's kind of how I would start positioning a lot of this, because you can't really attack them on the facts and things like that. It's more of just like, you need to be able to have a strong enough statement that they need to attack you, because they're expecting you to soy out and attack them, and they get to look strong and don't have to actually stake out anything. I don't know. I mean, it's just that's kind of how it looks to me whenever I'm watching a lot of this. But I mean, I don't know. I've only done one real debate or anything, and I really didn't enjoy it. So, like, I don't have a ton of cachet to talk about this with you, because, like, I don't know, I did, like, one WIC panel and it just was super distasteful to me. I don't know how you do it so much.
Pretty dumb.
Yeah. So you I hear you're talking big game about this hearing coming up. You think it's gonna
Well, no, I don't know. I hope it is, but in my mind, I thought it was like in my mind, I kind of expected it to just get auto granted the request for continuance. Like my understanding is that stuff like that is pretty routine, and it would be pretty exceptional for it to not be granted. And then, especially in this case, there's really like there's good cause for the trial not to happen next month because we haven't done party depots. But the I don't know the fact that it was the main judge too that called a hearing right after they filed without us even replying yet. I don't know. It gives me hopeful.
And it's the first continuance, right? Like there haven't been requests to extend discovery and some other things, but no one's at, so your first continuance is usually the easiest one to get.
Yeah.
She filed it after the pretrial motion deadline, which isn't a huge deal for continuances. You shouldn't do it, but it's not a huge deal if you've got good cause. But I think the issue is that all the causes, correct me if I'm wrong, all the causes she listed existed before that deadline hit, right? Like, there's nothing new in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say for, because we don't have any rulings on anything, maybe. I don't know when the appropriate time or what the deadline would have been to file a continuance for trial would be, but yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It definitely, like, everything that the judge is doing certainly sends a signal of, I'm fucking pissed off and do not like that you did this.
Also, the fact that she refused, like, this judge has already said, because she kind of mini chewed out my lawyer like a year and a half ago, but it was because it's so funny being so deep into all this process. I realize now how insane this was. But in the very beginning of this case, we had a meet and confer with them where we were just talking about interrogatories and like random stuff like that. And then the day after our meet and confer, they filed a TRO without heads up because at all. And then I think the judge called for an emergency hearing like either the next day or like 2 days later. And there was just no time for my team to get down. And she didn't really chime out, but she was like, I prefer to have everybody here in person. If we're going to do these, that would be preferable to me.
I remember that.
So the fact that we're having a hearing that's scheduled a week out, Joan is supposed to be a litigator that practices in Florida with a Florida address. And she's filing, 6 days ahead of time that she can't show up in person. And she's just going to fucking Zoom in, which she has, by the way, for every single deposition that we've conducted too. It's just so fucking annoying.
Well, and the other thing that people need to realize is like, okay, when it comes to continuances, okay, it's you just going to the court and saying, can we just move a scheduling thing back? It's not really like a legal thing. There's like the rules around it are pretty fuzzy. It's just a plea to equity, which is just like saying, hey, judge, I need this. I'd appreciate it if you do it. And judges generally will just like take it and just go like, why do you need it?
How much is it going to hurt? As long as you can articulate any reason whatsoever, you're generally granted it.
It's not like it's not like a strict thing like a motion to dismiss where like there's rules around it in those ways. And so like I'm saying that because for her to like show up, ask that, and then tell the court, I didn't talk to your coordinator. I didn't plan ahead around when this would happen. And I didn't tell you that I had a thing in New York on the 21st until like days after you scheduled it. It's just such a bad look. Like, it just is, it's really, it comes across as disrespectful. You don't care about the court's time. Because, like, courts will have clerks and coordinators. Some courts have, that will unify the position. But you can just call these people that work there and say, this is the motion I want to file. I want a hearing for it. What dates are we going to get for it? And it's not ex parte because you're just trying to schedule something. Uh-huh. And you can even include the other party in it. So it's like, it's just a really kind of stupid thing to do on her part, and it makes sense that the judge turns around and goes like, oh, okay, you don't want to appear, that's fine, I guess you can listen.
It's just which, I'm hoping my hope is that we're also going to get a lot of I'm hoping that she's just going to you can give oral rulings on motions, right, that have been filed paperwork.
Of course.
I'm hoping we're going to chew through a bunch of those. I really want to hear I'm so curious to hear them address the show cause for the skipping the deposition and emailing my lawyer saying we're not going to tell the court because we don't need to. And it's like, why would you ever put this in writing?
Yeah,
I just want to hear
you guys were there for that, right?
There's a strict rule of if you send an email, assume it's going to be an exhibit and then write it appropriately.
So well, sure, but even without the email, the deposition had been noticed with the court. So why the fuck would you skip it without saying anything? But of course that too. Especially you're emailing opposing counsel, right? Yeah. But I don't know, man. I really want to hear the explanation for that. Jesus.
I think that for me, there's a cluster of motions here that are likely to be addressed.
All kind of like interconnected, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got the continuance, discovery extension, your everything to do with the depositions.
I'm really hoping the thing I'm praying the most
all
for
that stuff
is the is I hope that there's just a big conversation on the subject matter jurisdiction question or whatever, because I feel like there's a lot of stuff kind of revolving around that. I don't think you're supposed to file a lawsuit and lie and make shit up in order to go fishing for subject matter jurisdiction. My guess is that's probably not okay.
Generally, if there's a part where you say we're going to file a lawsuit by lying, you're rarely in the good position.
So I'm hoping that there, because it blows my mind that they didn't even respond. I don't think they even responded to the motion for summary judgment, the MSJ.
Yeah, they didn't. And well, in my opinion, they didn't. I don't know specifically that jurisdiction if they consider 56Ds to be a response. Here's the only saving grace they might get, and this still shouldn't do it, in my opinion. If they extend discovery to a future date, and then they do the discovery, let's say they do a deposition or get some more discovery, and then file a response and say, see, this is within the 56D. We needed to do more discovery so we could respond, even though the judge didn't extend it. We filed it before they ruled on it. And then the judge might go, okay, we're going to just grant the 56D up until the date that they replied. Consider the motion to be responded to and then just take it on the merits. Uh-huh. That's retarded in my opinion. They shouldn't do that, but that's the only way I can see it getting there.
Sure. Assuming they find something in the additional discovery or whatever that for some reason
Yeah, so like as far as like stuff being granted, I think discovery extension, no. I think the deposition stuff, the judge is the most likely thing where the judge just goes, we're going to extend this a week, both parties do your depositions, then it's over.
Yeah, wait, here's my question. Schedule depositions outside of discovery? Like, is the judge allowed to say you can schedule depositions, but otherwise discovery is closed?
If both parties agree to it, who cares? Sure.
Okay. Because my only worry is...
But if you say, I don't
want
to do it, then you don't have to do it, unless the judge forces you to.
Sure. My only worry is that if discovery is reopened, does that theoretically kick everything down like 6 months, or can they just?
No, I mean, like, because the judge could, it could, but like it would be really weird if discovery was like closed for this long, and the judge comes in and goes, okay, we're gonna do 6 more months of discovery, especially whenever there's not a clear reason why they need it. You guys need maybe a month to get depos. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe that long. All right, and the judge could literally order the depots to happen on a specific date. I don't think they will, but they could. So, like, let's say they just say, okay, you got a month to do depots. After that, if you don't do them, that's it. All right, that especially for you. You, like, she skipped your deposition, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, she skipped you guys deposing her.
Yeah.
Okay, that happened. That's really bad. And I could see the judge going, we're going to allow party depositions because she skipped this one when she shouldn't. She's going to have to pay for the old one and the new one. And then probably the judge would just go like, since you're doing her depo this time, we're going to do, you know, Stevens at the same time because he's a party as well. Just get it out of the way.
Sure. You saw that whole back and forth, right? The goofiness of that.
What, the depo stuff?
Yeah. Did you ever see all the...
Yeah, that was...
They basically it was for those who don't know, basically like we were back and forth and we were like, okay, well, like, does the week of this work for depots? And they're like, yeah, this week definitely works fine for a depo. And then Brettler was like, okay, yeah, cool, you know, Steven will do his this day and then Pixie can do hers the next day, whatever. And they're like, oh, no, Pixie can't do hers for another month. And Andrew's like, well, but we're gonna fly in or whatever, can't we do them both? And I was like, no, Pixie can't do hers for a month. And then Andrew's like, okay, well, how about we do Steven and Pixie's at the end of the month? And they're like, no, you already agreed to the first. And we're like, well, okay, but we thought we were both going to do it. It's like, no, you agreed to the first. Pixie can do hers in a month. Also, it's going to be remote. And it was like, wait, really? And then did they notice mine with the court? I think they noticed it with the court. And they were like, yep, we've already filed this with the court. So now you have to do your depo now or like on the first, whatever. Pixie can do hers in a month if we can agree on it. It was like, are you serious? Yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Well, and it's okay. So chat, like, here's some very basic, like, just, I don't even know if it's legal advice, just an idea. If you give consent in a legal thing, generally you can withdraw that consent, right? Especially if like nothing has happened yet. So mm-hmm. like, let's say like I say, yes, Steven, you know, I can do this deposition on the 16th, and then before you're able to call anyone, schedule anything, get anything in line, I call you back and say, actually, I'm sorry, the 16th won't work. I need to do the 17th.
And they're like, nope, you agreed with it. Sorry. Nope. You're right. Fucked. It's over. You're going to jail now. Contempt. You're gone.
Like, Jesus Christ. Now, if they said, hey, look, you know, you said that I've already scheduled it for the 16th. I've already placed a deposit that's non-refundable. You need to pay me back. That is reasonable. If Jones said, look, you know what, maybe he didn't come to it, that's fine. He said he could. Before they came back and said that I couldn't, I put a non-refundable deposit down, you know, and impossible. That would never happen. But and I'm now out $3,000. Y'all should have to refund me. Yeah, actually, that's fair. Y'all should refund her for that. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened. And it's also silly because it's like, the deal is that, like, y'all, as far as I could remember, were like, we're fine to talk about other dates. Y'all weren't like, we can't do it, and we will never do it. Fuck you, Joan. You were like, no, we just can't do that day. Let's just pick another day.
And the fact that they were trying to say that, like, they were going to inconvenience me as much as possible, knowing that my lawyers have to fly out from California, which is fine. I chose to have foreign representation from another state. Yeah. But the fact that then they're saying that somebody who has sued me in the Southern District of Florida, are saying that they can't attend the deposition in person, and it's going to have to be remote, or we have to fly to fucking Illinois. Excuse me. You need to bring your ass back down to the jurisdiction that you sued me in. What the fuck? That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, they're really... It's funny because I remember whenever you were first talking about this, I was like, I don't think Destiny's wrong, but I just don't know if I've ever run into a scenario like this.
Where they're hostile.
So hostile, but also just like... Hostile in ways that just are illogical. Like this whole thing with, like, I'm not in town. It's like, you sued us. Like, you've been saying, you sued us here. I don't know of a single case I've ever seen where it's like...
They sue, and then they flee. They flee, and they're all...
Yeah. It's like, what are we doing? Like, why are you...
I almost had this, like, nightmare horror, but I don't even know if this is possible, where something comes up, and it's like, okay, we're going to grant the motion to dismiss... in full, because the first cause of action is tossed, and then we have no subject matter jurisdiction on the next three. And then all of a sudden they file, like, with the court, like, actually, the plaintiff now lives in Illinois, so it's actually diversity jurisdiction, so we're going to go ahead and pursue the final three things here. I don't know if you can do that midway through a fucking court case. Okay. But Jesus Christ.
That would be hilarious. But it's just been really, because someone in chat earlier was like, do you think they're lying about, like, meeting and conferring about the continuance? And I was like, there's no way anybody would do that. And they were like, what are you talking about? They did that earlier in this case. I was like, oh my God, you're right.
Not even lying about a meet and confer about a continuance. I think we agree to a motion that they showed us, because they sent us a copy of the motion. Then they filed a totally different motion for the court saying that it was a unopposed or whatever, or jointly filed.
That's
or whatever.
Crazy.
And it was like, bro, because it was like originally, yeah. I think it was a very narrowly tailored protective order, and they blew it out into just like the broadest fucking gag order possible. And it's like, jointly filed motion or unopposed motion. It was like, are we serious right now? Hello? And even I'm glad that the judge noticed that. It was like, this is significantly different than what you sent opposing counsel.
It's just hard to imagine trying to get away with it, I think is a good way to put it. I'm just like, y'all really thought you were gonna do this? Like, you, like, I don't know. And it's I know it's frustrating for you on a lot of this, but to me it's kind of this thing where, like, when everyone's like, is this gonna go to trial, it's like, I mean, like, I guess it could. It would be the weirdest thing ever if it did.
So wacky.
And back to your original point on this, it's like, I mean, in case people don't know, I'm all over Twitter, and you guys should go follow me, because I put out some incredibly mid shit that when you like it, it really makes me feel good about myself. But it's so funny when I'll, like, post some stupid thing, like, I'll reply to one of your stupid tweets or something, and it'll be, and then people will be like, you mean the sex best? He's in court right now. And it's just like, I can tell you don't follow the case, and it's like, I don't know how you would have a conversation with, like, those kind of people where you're like, you recognize that, like, none of this makes any sense, like, if you have any understanding of how court cases work, of how the law works, just none of this has any meaning. It's literally just designed so that bottom feeders can pick it up and then just wave it about as though it's some kind of, like, damning or interesting thing.
Yeah.
And that is kind of, like... Like, whenever people were, I remember a while ago, whenever this was earlier on in the case, people were like, Kafka, you really need to tell Destiny to stop talking about it publicly, blah, 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 stuff. And, like, I was like, no, I don't think so. I think that this makes a lot of sense, considering, like, how happily, like, you know, gleefully everyone is, like, cavorting over every single filing and misinterpreting it in the worst way possible. Like,
not to mention, it's funny that, because people keep saying, and I do agree as a rule of thumb, you probably don't ever talk about anything publicly because you really don't, even me, you don't know where it's going to show up in a court filing or whatever. They don't might fuck you or whatever, but it's civil court. So at the end of the day, the damages are all monetary and reputation anyway. So if I could counter something publicly, that's going to help me monetarily or reputationally, like it's worth it. But like the only stuff that's been damaging, I would argue, that's been in rulings, I think it's been some of Pixie's statements. Like, I remember them because they were making an argument. They're in a very weird spot making that argument for the preliminary injunction, trying to claim that they were going to suffer injuries that would never be made whole again by the court. But that's a really hard claim to make when Pixie's literally tweeting out that, like, I want to sue him to recover or whatever. Like, this is, like, I have to sue him in order to get my money back for whatever. And it's like, and I'm pretty sure the judge wrote that in the denial of the preliminary injunction. It's like, well, she's literally saying here that this is the goal, is a lawsuit, is to make money, and the stuff's already out there, so it seems like she can't be hurt anymore. I don't know how you can say that this is a, there's a specific term for it. You file a preliminary injunction because...
Irreparable harm.
Yeah. I don't know how you can say that somebody could be irreparably harmed when the video is already out there and the plaintiff is out here saying she's suing to recover costs for whatever. And it's like,
And it's kind of the thing too, where like when I talk to people, it's lawsuits and the law feel so mysterious to a lot of people that they don't like realize how mundane a lot of it is too, where it's like, you just kind of need to think about, like, what's the point of this? And you kind of talked about it earlier where it's like, oh, you need to, like, get remedies that they can, you know, resolve this matter. And it's like, yeah, like, do you think that we set up the court system in a way so that, like, people can just come in here and fuck up other people's lives? Like, that's the point. Like, we want that out of our courses. Like, you think that's a good idea that we allow people to do that shit? And so it's like... A lot of the times, I think people on the one hand will like decry how like, oh, this is all super emotionless and people get harmed by the legal system so much, things like that. And there's some truth to it.
I think, but I think at the same issue time, is that
they'll
think,
like turn around and be like, ha ha, this is what you get, fucker.
It's yeah,
like,
I think the big difference is that one, because of the internet, stuff carries so much more. Like my guess is going to be that more pre-internet times, like a court case is seen as kind of a court case for most people. So like, you know, you wouldn't necessarily jump to a conclusion. Obviously with really big cases, I guess maybe, you know, people might form conclusions beforehand. But whereas filing a court case is basically as much damage as you can do to somebody, you know, like you're already accomplished like 90% of the way there. Yeah.
It's funny. So not a lot of people know this, but like, while PACER exists, for state courts, it's actually really hard to get a hold of their filings, mainly because every court basically has their own – every jurisdiction has their own filing system. There's current projects to try to unify them or find a way to make them all searchable in one place. They're not being very successful. But there are small counties in certain states that you literally cannot get a digital record. You have to fly there in person.
Go to the clerk or whatever the fuck and ask for the person to go Xerox off a copy of a filing or whatever. Yeah.
Especially if it's an older one, especially if it's a case before the 80s. Yeah, good luck. There's some cases that are on microfilm. There's some cases that have just magnetic tape recordings, you know? And so like before the internet, especially, and even really before recent internet, you know, pre-trial stuff basically didn't exist in the mind of a layperson. There's just no concept of it.
Sure.
It was, oh, it's a lawsuit. Okay, you go into the courtroom and everybody does their trial, right? Yeah.
I've never
interact with it and they don't know how.
I don't know if maybe you've seen this in filings. You think I've never seen somebody say it was funny when Jordan was like, this court case doesn't exist, so we couldn't find it on Lexis.
I messaged somebody about this, but it's like, okay, it's very funny to like, you will have times as an attorney where you see another attorney cite to the wrong case and you're like, oh, I got your ass. Or even a case that doesn't exist. 99 times out of 100, it's just a case where somebody put a number in the wrong spot or mistyped the name. Yeah. And the idea that you would like race to file that, like the amount of checking you do to make sure it's wrong. And then there's no way I'd expect it of Joan, but like if I was in any other setting, I would have probably like, and it was like an opposing counsel who I didn't hate, I would have probably just called the person directly and said, hey,
yeah, because like
I don't think this is what you meant to cite.
It's also like a pretty big, and I understand that like for Joan and Pixie, like her and her family and all the weird con men that exist around this piece of shit have no reputation, I guess, at stake anyway, so they don't give a fuck if they look like retards or not. But like you're it's a pretty, like if I'm arguing or debating a big figure and I'm about to stake some big claims, like I do try to research because like I don't want to like fuck something up when I'm like in the limelight, you know, that would be pretty embarrassing. And obviously Joan is like a nobody, you know, a little con family lawyer. And, you know, the Rettler firm is obviously much more prestigious, larger, deals with bigger cases. The idea that you would just like casually slide into something, oh, by the way, they cited to a case that's not even fucking real. It's like, why wouldn't you at least Google it first? Like, do you really think that this law firm that it has how many clients, how much of a reputation is just making cases up for this fucking Southern District of Florida civil one-on-one? So, like, you really think they're just making cases? Like, what a weird thing. No, yeah. Like you said, like, there are a million ways to get, like, you call them, you'd email them, you'd look it up more, you try to figure out, like, what's going on. Like, why would you just put that in a file? Like, they made this up.
Well, and also, like, the one time I've ever had it happen, and it was a, like, it's just, yeah, it's just the way you do it. And it's... It's kind of a thing that shows a lot of their pettiness. Not that we needed more examples of it, but like a lot of people are asking, like, "Oh, is the judge, you know, is the judge pissed off?" Or is it? It's like, yeah, the judge is very annoyed. They see exactly what's happening. They think Joan is stupid. They're not happy about it. You know, it sucks that they're dragging their feet on this other stuff, but okay, that's fine. You know, but it's that's kind of what I'm talking about. Where it's like, if they go to trial, like it would be. It would be a catastrophic if they went to trial. Like it's one of those things where like I don't think that Joan would have the composure to even seat the jury, let alone conduct the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate because like I am not advising you on what to do or whether or not you made the right decisions, but it's unfortunate that there aren't any counterclaims in this case because like God damn, if there were, like, you would be in a pole position to fucking collect on that shit.
Yeah, I don't know what... I kind of wonder if, especially, like, going by the conversations at the beginning, and I'm sympathetic to... I don't want to accuse my law firm of anything, and I'm making some assumptions, but, like, my... From the vibes that I get from everything, it does feel like... Or I guess you could tell me. It does feel like a lot of clients lie to their representation.
Oh yeah.
And I think if I had to guess coming into this, the especially given all the claims that plaintiff was making, I wonder if my law firm kind of thought like, listen, like we understand you made a mistake, but we're going to do our best to represent you. But they thought that I was exaggerating or not being fully forthcoming about all of the claims that I was making. Like, I wonder, knowing everything that I know now, if we go back to the very beginning, if they would have been like, you know what, we should definitely like counterclaim and lean into some of this stuff. Whereas I think in the beginning, they were like, there probably are like 15 fair, women actually. With all different claims, maybe. Yeah, you know, especially and also, given I mean, like the type of case, and you know, I'm a public figure and a guy,
and to their, I mean, like to their credit, they also probably assumed that there would be a reasonable point at which there would be a settlement or the other side would back out, right? Like this is largely retrospective. Like at the time, I remember people asking me about it, me being like, it's probably good he's not counterclaiming. He probably shouldn't do that.
Sure.
But like at this point, right, like it's kind of one of those things where like bad faith is hard to prove, but God damn it, are they trying their hardest to make you be able to do so? Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, that's like, I know that part can be pretty frustrating. And it's, I think that with like Joan and Pixie's behavior, honestly, the continuance being granted and then the deposition being allowed to go forward, like under the judge's specific orders, honestly, might not be the worst thing in the world because, and I've mentioned it before on stream, like you are seriously getting in the death penalty sanction range at that point. Like we are on track for trial.
Wait, I have no idea deadlines. What that it, means, the death penalty so, sanction.
Yeah, so death penalty sanction is often brought out in discovery disputes. And it's whenever one side is being so obstinate and so like disruptive to the discovery process and clearly doing so in bad faith, clearly doing it to prejudice the other side, that the judge will just go, okay, we're dismissing the case because you can't operate correctly. You cannot practice law correctly here. You are not doing this. I can tell you're doing it to harm the other person. We're just going to kill the case now and it's over. Hmm. And especially if you fuck up a deposition and then the judge orders you to do it a specific way and you fuck it up again, you are really tempting the judge to do the death. Because at that point, you're telling the judge, I don't want to testify. Even though I sued this person, I don't want to testify.
Sure.
And the judge will go, if you're not gonna testify at a deposition, how can I trust you to testify at trial?
Sure.
And if you're not going to testify at trial, what the fuck are we even doing?
Yeah. I was kind of, I don't know how much it matters. And I guess we would probably have to file motions to compel, which I'm not sure is worthwhile. But like, up to this point, they've accused me of every single piece of evidence that I've submitted. They all say is doctored or doesn't count or whatever else. I have no conversations. I don't have a single message between Pixie and Aaron. I don't have a single message between Pixie and Lauren. All I have is that Lauren text to Pixie where they talk about how they're going to use Signal so everything is auto-deleted. I have literally no discovery from her side of anything relevant. Which is
and
so
this
annoying.
Is where you not having any counterclaims actually helps you.
Oh, helps? Because, you think it helps me?
Yeah, because you don't have anything to prove. You just have to defend. You just have to keep her from reaching a threshold, right?
Well, sure, but I feel like if I had something to prove, I feel like I could get so many unfavorable adversarial readings or whatever based on their deletion of, like, if I had a counterclaim say for defamation or I don't know, something like that, and I would start asking, like, show me, like, I actually, and I really genuinely do want to see the messages between Pixie and Aaron, because the leaked video, in those videos, they were talking about a lot of stuff that I just have no, I don't know what those conversations, because some of the things were, you know, Aaron talks about how Pixie made up being suicidal to try to get more money out of me, that Pixie was working with somebody else to put together that Substack. Like, these are things that I think are all incredibly relevant to the underlying claims and the stuff that she's talking about, but I don't have access to any of it. She hasn't turned over any of that. And yeah, and then like when we deposed, you heard when we deposed her ex-boyfriend was like, yeah, she called me to tell me about the deposition, but I don't remember anything else about that phone call, and we delete all of our text messages to each other, and then Joe's like, stop, attorney, client privilege, and it's like, what do you mean? It's like, I represent him, actually. I am representing him, and it was like, and it was like, are you getting money, or did Pixie pay for you to have Joan, stop, that's attorney client privilege, and it's like, are you fucking serious? We can't depose anybody, because they're all represented by you too? Like, it's oh my God. I think that's probably one of my favorite things about this case is the fact that Joan represented Lauren, who is an attorney, represented Pixie's ex, represented Abby, represents every single person we're going to depose. She's like 2 weeks before the deposition becomes their lawyer. It's like, are we serious right now? Oh my God. And
the other, so the hard part about that for me is that, like, I don't know this specifically, but like abusing attorney-client privilege in that way is one of the few ways that, like, I feel like Joan could actually is kind of courting danger for herself. Yeah, because the other side of it is, and I don't know how much it has to be within your current court case or if there's going to be something separate. I just don't know about those things because I've never been that retarded to do that. But like one of the big things there is that it's like, if you ask questions to them about something that happened before she represented them, there's no attorney-client, right? If I start representing you today, Stephen, and people ask you about things that happened yesterday, I can't claim attorney-client privilege.
Maybe.
Even if it was a conversation between me and you.
I think you can stretch that a bit. Like, if I start talking to you about you potentially representing me, but we don't sign letters of engagement for a week or two, I think technically you can pull back to here. Because
But the deal is that only stretches to the specific context of that representation, right? Like if I'm representending you now and we talk about where we're going to go eat lunch, that's not protected by attorney-client privilege.
Well, yeah, I mean, you say that, but they're going to call, right? They're going to object attorney-client privilege on everything, and it's one of the few objections that you can actually shut down a deposition on, so we can't ask any more questions on there either, which is annoying.
But if it's a case that is worth having that fight over, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. It sounded like her boyfriend didn't have a whole lot that was worth fighting over.
Well,
but
I mean, we found out she lied about more things. She sent me pictures of him that he didn't even know she was sharing. Like, it wasn't like huge killer things.
The depo was worth it. I'm saying, like, the attorney-client privilege moments, it was like, are we going to go to the mat for this?
Well, that's the annoying thing. Like, you said this before that I thought was funny. We were like, if I'm asking a person something on a deposition and I'm leading them somewhere, I feel like in depos, especially on low stakes civil cases, I feel like you could just say, oh, I don't know, and it's like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna file a motion?
Are you gonna spend the money and the time?
Because like fuck, probably not, so whatever, just lie to me, fuck it.
Because like, if I'm in a and also you might just go, well, look, I don't, like, fine, you can say that now here, but then in court, whenever I've got other testimony, I've got other evidence in front of the jury, and it points to you being a lying sack of shit, and I'm giving you a chance right here, right now, set the record straight. And you say, okay, I'll set the record straight. And you go, well, that's weird, because in the deposition you said you didn't know.
Sure.
And then boom, right? You've got it where it's like, were you lying then or were you lying now? I can't tell. You need to clarify this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's benefits. But like, as far as the attorney-client privilege abuse goes, like, there are definitely times, like, I would bet if it in Pixie's depo, if it ever happens, that would be one where it might be where one of your attorneys might go, well, let's get the judge on the phone. And we're going to get them on the phone, and they're going to be mad that they're on the phone, and you're going to explain to them the attorney-client privilege. And then what the judge can do is see it in camera.
And then right? rule on the ejection right there. Yeah. Right then, yeah. Is that my cousin Vinny, or did that, was that a Law and Order episode? I feel like I've seen that happen one time on TV or whatever.
It is incredibly rare to do that. It's yeah. not a good idea to do that. But if someone's abusing attorney-client privilege, that can be something that, like, it might be worth it.
Yeah.
But also, you could then say, okay, I'm still going to ask the question here. And then whenever we get to pretrial, okay, we're going to sort this out at pretrial in front of the judge. You objected to attorney-client privilege. I'm going to the judge will see what the question was, and then the judge will say, okay, do I think this is attorney-client privilege or not? Things like that. It's super hard to get around it, yeah. and that's why they're using it. But
it was really
like
fucking
before,
annoying because like we wanted to ask her, especially her ex, because I mean, like, it looks like you're hardcore prepping a deponent. That's what it looks like if she is like messaging him. But yeah, but Joan kept like nibbling around the edges of like, you know, well, if he's having a conversation about getting representation, then this still counts as attorney-client privilege. It's like, so we're like, headed off from pursuing any of these lines of questioning. And it's like, this is a fucking joke, bro.
Well, and so like, and that's the other hard, this is the, like, way you would want to do it in front of the judge, is because like, let's say I represent you and Dan is present. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what we talk about. It cannot be attorney-client privilege because Dan is present and I'm not a Jewish lawyer, so I don't represent him. Okay.
It cannot be attorney-client. Well, you and me could claim attorney-client privilege, but Dan could still testify to it.
No, we could not.
Really?
Yeah. What, I can't claim it because someone was present. So how is it privileged? I knew someone was present.
Oh,
if I wanted to be privileged, why did I talk?
If Joan is representing all of them, then it doesn't
matter. But here's the deal. If she's representing one of them in one capacity and another one in another capacity, it doesn't necessarily follow that everything they talk about is going to be privileged between all three of them.
Sure. I don't disagree with you, but this sounds like a thing that you would have to finagle on like an elevated environment and not something that either party would agree to.
Yeah, you wouldn't do it in the
middle of depo. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
But like the other, like I said before, though, getting their ridiculous behavior on the record, because that's on the record, is still useful in its own ways. And you know, while that boyfriend did have some interesting info, you know, if you don't get everything out of him, that's fine. Y'all's defense of you against these claims don't rely on him exonerating you with every piece of information. You know, there was enough, like he said enough on there that was, like you said, was helpful.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But yeah, that is like a really frustrating part of depos, and like you can, in the middle of it, just have like, that is a place where you can have shit just drop on your head. Or like, oh fuck, I didn't know my client knew that. Or like you said, my client was lying the whole time, decided to tell the truth now. Fuck me, it's on the record.
Yikes.
So yeah, but good luck. I'm excited for you, everybody. A lot of people have been asking me. Please don't call in or try to call in. Just don't do it. Whether or not you're allowed to, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Don't fuck with the court. Don't make this hearing more complicated.
I don't know why you would say that, because
be.
Now people that want to fuck with him, but okay.
Well, they're going to do it already, Destiny.
Sure, true.
But
I hope I have a moment. What was that one guy? There was some guy who had a huge court case against some other loser who was like telling his fans the whole time that this was like completely locked in, was going to win 100%, and then he fucking
I don't know his name, but yeah,
and loses completely.
Got his guns taken away or something? Yeah.
Wait. Oh, no. You're thinking of Tectone. I'm thinking of I think it was an Australian thing. It was a guy who, Carl Jobst or whatever. Did you ever hear anything about that guy?
No, I don't really pay attention to Australia.
Basically, he was being sued by Billy Crystal or something. I don't know if I'm making that name up, but like, yeah, he was telling his audience the whole time. He's like, yeah, you know, we're winning, we're doing good, it's easy. And then all of a sudden the judgment comes down and it's like $400K against him and he completely lost.
Billy Mitchell. I remember this. Billy Mitchell, yeah. Because I really like that Fistful of Quarters movie.
Oh my God. And then he was saying the whole, like we were feeding this whole thing through ChatGPT and they said that the court case was a lock for us. I was like, why would you say this publicly, bro?
Yeah, if I could tell you what clients have said to me about ChatGPT.
Oh,
okay, last thing and then I gotta go. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Marty Supreme?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh no, you didn't like it.
It was okay.
Are you not a Softy Brothers fan?
Sometimes. I really liked the interview. What was the one with oh my God, every name I've ever known in my life just got wiped from my mind. Nathan
For You?
Yeah, that guy. What's that guy's name? Nathan
Felder?
Felder. The Curse. Yeah, that show I thought was cute.
Oh, I haven't seen that show. Is it good?
Yeah. It's cute.
Okay. Did you see, you've seen Uncut Gems and you didn't like it?
Yes, I liked Uncut Gems a lot. And Good Time?
Good Time?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I probably like those movies more than Marty Supreme.
Yeah, I thought Marty Supreme was super meh. I don't know.
Marty Supreme is only one of the brothers, right? They split up the directorial duo.
I think they've been split up for a bit, right? Like, I think the curse might have only been one of them, too. I also really like the guy, whoever is in the curse, whoever that guy is. I like him as an actor, too. I think he's cute. I don't know which brother it is, but yeah.
Oh, the younger brother?
I don't know, because I don't know who the other brother is, so.
If you haven't listened to it, since you liked Uncut Gems, if you haven't listened to it, I know you're not a fan of Chapo, but Chapo did a really good interview with the brothers about Uncut Gems. I recommend you listen to it at some time.
Okay.
But yeah. Okay, I'm going to get back to real job. It was fun talking to you, though.
Yeah, I love you. Have fun. Be careful.
You too. Bye.